Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And greetings. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Steve Day Show here, live and on demand. Actually, Wednesday. I lost track of the days. Happy Wednesday. Live and on demand here on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. I am Steve Dace. He is Todd Erzin, and over there is someone you will not be hearing from much today. Our very own Aaron McIntyre, who probably doesn't even want to put himself on camera today. Aaron has played hurt before. Brutal honesty. We probably shouldn't be doing this show today. And if we were not up against the clock here where the Iowa caucuses in our own backyard are concerned, we would not be. Aaron is very, very down, very ill. And so going to be a modified program today. I'll tell you more about that after I tell you about our friends at First Cup Coffee Company. Christian-owned Patriot Coffee Company stands for the same core values of family and country that many of you do, and they also make some killer coffee, according to Aaron, when he can talk, and many of you who have tried it as well. There's a flavor for every freedom-loving American. It is shipped within days of being roasted. The roast date is actually placed right there on the bag. You can go to firstcup.com, use code DACE, and save an additional 10% on your order when you do that. And if you subscribe, you can save an additional 10% for the life of your subscription. firstcup.com, promo code DACE. That's firstcup.com, promo code DACE. All right, so today's show will be a little bit modified. We will not have a montage today. I tried to take as much off of Aaron's plate today as I possibly could. And then also, buy, sell, or hold, Todd, we're going to have to slum it and actually read the submissions to ourselves.
I'll have to check the fine print of my contract, see if I can endure.
All right. Other than that, we will have buy, sell, or hold beginning at the bottom of the hour. We will be joined at the tail end of the program by Florida First Lady Casey DeSantis. She will be here with us in studio here in about 90 minutes. So we look forward to that conversation. So what are we going to do here at the top of the program? And I spent my time at the gym contemplating that this morning. And felt a little, maybe conviction, maybe it was inspiration, that there is something I think we need to discuss on the show that I've not shared with you in the audience. Part of it is because it kind of sounds a little crazy. But I think the conviction slash inspiration comes from the fact that it is one of the driving influences and impulses of how I'm doing the show these days. And so because of that, I think it's fair that it needs to be discussed. You guys should know where I am coming from. And it's a topic that has come up a lot over the last year or so. And it's even within our audience, we push on you guys a lot. We lean on you a lot. And you guys are pretty tough and resilient to keep coming back. And we appreciate that greatly. This is not just a Chuckle Hut show. This is not just the team GOP talking points of the day. And let's just lay them all out, check the box. Yeah, you know, we did the conservative media seminar program and got to, we got it done. Money was made. Hay's in the barn. See you tomorrow. This is a show that challenges. I mean, if you want to make a biblical worldview the prime directive of your show, that's going to be very challenging. It is both the greatest bestseller in human history and the most unpopular book in human history at the exact same time. So I want to see if I can explain something and maybe have it be, and a lot of you are still not going to agree, but maybe have it be kind of a Rosetta Stone, Todd, for lack of a better description, you know, something we can refer back to. And, you know, we used to say this a lot on the show, but we don't say it as much anymore, but it is still kind of the way we think. We're not so much always trying to win an argument around here. We're trying to start one. I don't have, as far as I know anyway, some form of like specific prophetic anointing. So this isn't thus speaketh the Lord God of hosts. This is just, you know, someone who loves the Lord, loves his word, has studied it, and has made it his life's mission and passion. And I think that is my calling, is to try to bring it onto to as many mainstream platforms as I possibly can to let the lion out of its cage. This is my attempt to do this. Doesn't mean it's right. I'm not a theologian. I have no ecclesiastical authority whatsoever. I just have one of the largest audiences of believers that listen to any singular person on a given day in America. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that I have any added extra authority than that. I mean, I would say a pastor of a small country church who has been commissioned, you know, to spearhead, to lead that church, and there's 150 people in there, has more ecclesiastical authority than I do. That's what I think. But if we are going to have this large audience of believers, and if we are going to make a biblical worldview the prime directive of the show, and we have, and as a result, I think that's why we do have this large audience of believers. I think that we have been unevenly yoked, and that's on me. And you need to know where I am coming from. So let me just lay this out here. I believe this country is under a generational curse. And this is something that, Todd, you've heard me talk. We've talked about this privately. Aaron, if he could talk today, would acknowledge the same thing. There's a tight group of friends that I have, of people and contacts around the country. I've discussed this with them. But we haven't really fleshed it out or discussed it on the show. And part of it is, I think it kind of sounds crazy. You know, and that's never totally stopped us before, but we do kind of feel like there's only so much crazy you can serve up at one time. You know what I'm saying? You got to give people time to breathe, you know, but here's what I mean by that. If you look in the scriptures, there are numerous references to generational curses, and most of them, not all, I mean, Christ talks about this in the Gospels, for example, but most of these references are in the Old Testament. And a lot of that is because God is dealing first and foremost covenantally with a nation, according to that prophetic timeline in the scriptures. Now, did I say he's exclusively dealing covenantally with a nation? No, I said primarily. The Mosaic and Abrahamic covenants are what's driving, are what drive the narrative of the Old Testament. However, you still went and made sacrifices at the temple as an individual, correct? There were still personal acts of atonement that you still had to engage in. Yes. Even underneath that larger, broader national covenant, you still had to engage in individual acts of atonement, because from the very beginning, from Genesis to Revelation, this has always been a one-on-one relationship with God. God did not call Abraham's people. He called Abraham. God did not call Abraham's descendants. He called Abraham, and Abraham was an individual. God did not call Moses' people. He called Moses. He did not call Moses' descendants. He called Moses. It's always an individual. Didn't say, Moses, bring all the Israelites here. I have a law to give them. He gave the law to Moses. And then Moses brought the people the law. This has always been about an individual relationship with God. And that paradigm is even more stressed in the New Testament now. Now the veil has been torn. And we can all individually approach the throne of grace. But if you go to the founding of this country, if you take an obvious and objective historical look at the founding of this country, you can see that the two driving influences from the time the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock until the Constitution was ratified, the two driving influences were a biblical worldview and thinking that came out of the Enlightenment, or to make it more circumspect, the Enlightenment and the Reformation were the two driving influences. The Pilgrims who landed at Plymouth Rock, they believed in things that we often curse today in the American church. Postmillennialism, theonomy, these things are bad words. I mean, you get labeled the theonomist in a Southern Baptist church, have a nice life. They'll excommunicate you for that, and they don't even believe in it. Okay, so, I mean, this sort of mass covenantal language from the Old Testament, maybe broad covenantal language is a better way of putting it. This sort of broad covenantal language of the Old Testament was one of the driving theological plumb lines of the founding of this nation. That doesn't mean they had the right theology. Is that what I said?
No.
No. I'm not here to play referee where that's concerned. I have my own opinions on these topics. You guys want to ask me what I think some days. I answer them most of the time if I can. I'm not here to play theological scorekeeper. I'm just reciting history. These are facts. That's what drove these people. And it was clear. Look at the language of the Declaration of Independence. We ask the supreme ruler to judge the rectitude of our actions. And 56 men signed that, for example. This is covenantal language. They are attempting to emulate in a civic realm. I mean, the United States is not a second Israel. There's only been and only will be one Israel. But they're attempting on a civic level, on a broad civic level, to emulate what they saw work in the scriptures. That when a people choose life, they are blessed. And when they choose death, they are cursed. As Moses said to the people of Israel, I've set before you life and death. Choose life so that you may live in the land. And this is everywhere. It's all over our founding documents. It's the Ten Commandments on the walls, painted on the walls of the Supreme Court. It's the opening salvo of every state constitution either mentions God specifically or some reference to him. They were attempting to emulate this. They were attempting to say, we believe you are God. And in a New Testament world now, your house is a house of prayer to all nations. So we, these English speaking peoples here of these United States, we are saying we are asking for your divine providence, the hand of your guidance, of your blessing on this land, and accountability and justice, by the way, provided that we live according to the laws of nature and nature's God, the basic morality, the general broad revelation, the natural law that God has revealed to the creation. Fair so far?
Yes.
Okay. What's happened is there has been a generation that has full-throated, and comprehensively, did I say completely? Is that what I said?
No.
No. But comprehensively has turned away from these things. And it started with the Summer of Love and the dawn of the counterculture, and it just continues on. Now, we had other generations that signed off on all this covenantal language I just talked about and then went to slave auctions, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that wasn't good, right? Yeah. The greatest generation came home after saving Western civilization and then gave an audience to Kinsey and Hefner. That wasn't good, was it?
No.
No. Which kind of set the tone for all of this. The greatest generation also gave us the Great Society, which was the advent of the welfare state. That wasn't a great thing either, was it?
No.
No. So, what has been the perfect generation, given that some of the 56 men that signed that declaration and invoked that covenantal language believed in slavery, or at least practicing it. Name the perfect generation of emulating that covenant since the dawn of this country. Name the perfect one.
There isn't one.
There has not been one. You know why? Because how many perfect people are there?
None.
But name the generation before the current one, the boomers, that comprehensively rejected it in total. Has there been one? No.
I would say no.
We've talked about every generation has its blind spots, but comprehensively, every definition of everything fundamental in a human society was brought to bear and made to be questioned in the boomer generation. I don't even know how this is a debatable point. We got divorce culture, we got abortion culture, we got third wave feminism, we got the rainbow jihad, we got the sexual revolution, latchkey kids, deadbeat dads. I mean, I could just go on and on. How much longer should I go on with this?
Point made.
Political correctness. And I think that is the driving, I've used that term a lot here during this probably to you annoying monologue. But I think that that has, I really believe this, that this is the driving spiritual spirit of the age in this culture. That the country is under a generational curse. And the same things that apply, if I'm right, in our time, or applied scripturally, apply in our time. If you are a Christian, it doesn't matter what generation you're in. If you're a believer, it doesn't matter what generation you're in. You are in covenant, right covenant with God. But that does not mean that just because there's no condemnation in Christ, that does not mean there will be no consequences, correct?
Right.
We have natural disasters. People that are in right covenant with God die in them all the time, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. We have financial disasters. People who are in right covenant with God go bankrupt all the time. Right?
The world is fallen.
Yes. And it's not because of anything necessarily they did. Maybe it is. I mean, maybe they didn't follow through on their sanctification and let sin crouch at their door and they made poor choices. That can happen, right? Yeah. Okay. I mean, I've come very close to making some very poor moral choices in my own life the last few years. I've talked very openly about this. But a lot of times for the believer, that's really not the case, is it? It's just part of being in the world. Even though you're not of it, you're still in this world. And when bad things happen in this fallen creation, you're not immune to them. You just know that if your number's up, you wake up. The next thing you do is wake up in paradise. But your number could still come up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no guarantee your number's not coming up. And what bothers me is when we talk about these generational things and the amount of people who will email me and say, I'm a believer. I'm not, I don't believe in any of this. I'm not a part of this. I mean, you're not to see yourself as part of any form of a broader group if you're a believer other than the Church of Jesus Christ. Like, I love my Michigan Wolverines, small L, right? Took my family out to the Rose Bowl, right? Okay. If we found out tomorrow that a star player or a key coach had kiddie porn on his computer, would that in any way, shape, or form, because of the amount of, because my basement is, my man cave is painted maize and blue, would that in any way, shape, or form be any form of an indictment against me.
No, not immediately, no.
You know why? Because it wasn't my computer. Not mine.
But if that team, any team, is continuing to be obviously and not surprisingly loaded with that kind of thing, and we continue to give our attention to that to an idolatrous point of view, then it is.
Yeah, because but not because of the sins that they committed, but because of my own sins,
yes.
My own ability to, because now I'm not separating myself from that.
Right.
I'm not even saying something like, hey, this is my team, I root for them, but I don't approve of any of that. Everyone should go to prison, or I should not root for them. I'm not making any distinctions or separation from what is obviously wicked or evil, but I am seeing myself as part of this larger attachment, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There is no broader attachment. You're part of the Church of Jesus Christ. That's the only broader attachment. I got an email from a guy saying, you know, I'm a believer. You know, one of my kids wants to have a gay wedding. Should I go? I wouldn't. I love my children. I think you've seen them all. Over the years, you've seen all three of my kids. I think I've demonstrated to them my love for them. I would not attend their gay wedding. I wouldn't stop loving them any less than I already do. But do they get to define what marriage is?
No.
Do I get to define what marriage is?
No.
If it's somebody I'm close to and the situation gets emotionally difficult, am I then allowed to define what marriage is?
No.
No. Who defines what marriage is?
God.
God. And then ultimately, who am I accountable to?
Him.
Him. Yeah. Every generation, there's a remnant of people who withstand this. But collectively, I absolutely believe we are under a generational curse. And I think the only way out of that, when you get into that biblically, historically, the only way out is for either a new generation, which is what the Israelites faced, 40 years in the desert until a new generation's time, or you have to have revival. What I am more afraid of than Democrats... Am I a fan of Democrats?
No.
No. What I'm more afraid of than even the spirit of the age, because my Lord conquered the grave. My Lord crushes the head of the serpent. My God rules. He reigns. I'm not afraid of the spirit of the age. That's why I'm going right back in. It wasn't because it made me a millionaire, brother. I'm going right back in, making some more nefarious content, joking out loud about, wonder how they'll try to kill me this time. Because I'm not afraid of that. Everybody's number comes up. I can't think of a better way to go out than being such a threat to the spirit of the age. It has to kill me. My gosh. If that doesn't get you a well done, good and faithful servant when you wake up in eternity, man, then I don't know what does. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. What a badge. What a crown. That I had to be killed. Any of us. You were such a threat to the enemy. At the end, they just had to kill you. Yes, please. I'm in. I'll take that over the slow deteriorating. I'm in my 90s and my wife's changing my diapers death any day of the week. You too, I'm guessing?
Yes.
Any day of the week, I'll take that, baby. You bet. What a funeral that'll be. Dad was a badass, man. Hell just had to take him out. Yep, I'm in. I'll take that one. Those are some good parting words. Thank you. What I'm actually afraid of is that we're not recognizing if what I think is true is right. If it's wrong, prove me wrong. Believe me, I don't want to be right about this. But if I'm right, we need to really reevaluate how we're thinking here. Because one of the things, if I'm right, and I may not be, I want to make that very clear. I've tried to approach this, you know, I was just in the bathroom. I do this before every show, man, but I was praying all the more for humility. So I hope I'm expressing that. If I'm not, that's on me and I'm sorry. But if I'm right, if I'm right, we're doing almost everything wrong. we are continuing the same paradigms we always did before. But this time, we'll do it harder. We'll do it better. I'll Fox News harder. I'll vote harder. You're right, Steve. My generation wrecked this, so we've got to fix it. We've got to fix it. And so I've got to vote for people of my generation, for example, and put them in power and hold on to power. I'm the 82-year-old pastor at a megachurch. No one knows if my number comes up tomorrow because I'm not buying green bananas. No one knows who's running this church, man, if I go out. No one has a clue what the line of secession is. There is no 40, 50-year-old man that has been groomed and in the right way and that people are ready to take over as their leader, as the one to bring them the word. No, I've just got to stand here in this pulpit until my last day with my last breath, holding the rope. If I'm wrong, keep doing that. And I might be wrong. I might be wrong, right? I might be wrong.
You're not.
If I'm right, the hole your kids and grandkids are already in might just be insurmountable when you're gone. And if you are a boomer who gets this, you don't need to email me and tell me this. And I don't understand. I'll apologize to you. Maybe I should have explained this from the very beginning. And you're probably right. But the thing I've never understood is, if you get this, then why are you offended? If everybody that shoots up a school this year is named Steve, I'm not going to feel any form of collective guilt. I didn't fire the gun. It's not me. I'm not responsible for anybody, for all these Steves in the world. If you are an individual, if you're part of the remnant in your generation, and you read this, you get the signs of the times, you see what's going on, and you're thinking, you're tracking with me. Doesn't mean we're right, by the way, because we're tracking together, but I don't understand. If we're tracking together, you don't need to be offended. I'm not talking about you. You get it. But if I'm right, and we had the first generation in American history just comprehensively, just walk away from that civic covenant with Jehovah, with Yahweh, just walk away from it. To say, yeah, we kind of know. We know what a human is. We know what a law is. We know what a border is. We know what reality is. We know. We got this. And then they weren't like mass opposed, even if it was just a small remnant of people, but they weren't mass opposed. In Ezekiel, God says to the watchman on the wall, if I put you there and you did not warn the people, you will suffer there. They will suffer for what they said and have done against me, but you will suffer that you did not fulfill your calling and do something about this. That's kind of what I'm alluding to here. The instinct collectively of the righties in this generation is to hold on for as long as possible because they don't trust the next generation. And by the way, you're right to not trust the next generation. I'm part of it. I'm not all that optimistic that we're that much better off. We're going to be able to undo any of what's been done. But you know, one of the reasons why we're not to be trusted? You didn't father us. You didn't mentor us. You didn't prepare us. You didn't coach us. You held on for as long as absolutely possible. But eventually, Father Time is undefeated, and the generation I'm a part of is going to be 40, 50, 55, and eventually they will ascend. And we're going to find out probably in very harsh terms, they are in no way, shape, or form prepared for what is coming. And it's already here. If we're under a generational curse, we need a lot more humility. If we're not, cool. Keep doing what you're doing. Maybe this time it'll work. Or maybe there's a reason all the tropes of this era have failed. One or the other. More in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Constitution Wealth is the Patriot's choice in wealth management. Let me ask you something. Do you avoid shopping with businesses who offend your values? That can be difficult to do. Kind of hard to eliminate it altogether. But why not apply that to your own investment portfolio? Constitution Wealth can help you do that, help you to align your values with your portfolio, your principles with your portfolio. They can help you build a solid investment plan because you still have to retire someday. They can reduce your investments in ESG, DEI, and CEI participation, as well as in companies that invest in pornography, abortion, anti-family policies, etc. Reduce your investments in the woke corporations. And in doing so, you have put the prosperity that God has gifted you with, you have put it to good use here in the spiritual battle happening in America. This is your opportunity to help build the parallel economy. Work with an investment firm comprised of professionals who are patriots just like you. Work with an advisor who shares your values too. So why work with anyone else when you can work with constitutionwealth.com/Steve and sign up for a free consultation today. That's constitutionwealth.com/Steve. constitutionwealth.com/Steve. All right, before we move on to buy, sell, or hold, I just brought up a pretty heavy topic, heavy subject. I would like us, Todd, to flesh it out a little bit, either with your thoughts or things that you think maybe I need to clarify.
I don't think you need to clarify it. And I think us saying this out loud is as important for us as it is for you. We're not going to be doing you any service going down the road if we don't come to the table with this on our hearts and minds every single day. Some heavier more than others, but this is the whole ball game, and this is end game stuff. There's no way. I didn't know exactly what Steve was going to say, but I
that's true. Let me clarify that. At the top of the show, I mentioned to Todd, there's been something weighing on me that I have not addressed publicly that we've talked about privately, and just felt convicted, inspired at the gym this morning with Aaron's montage off the table. We had this hole this morning to open the show. I mean, I guess we could be discussing the back and forth between Hunter Biden and Nancy Mace today, but everybody else is going to do that, right?
Yeah.
So today's the day where I needed to come clean about something. I didn't even tell you what it was. So I just gave you a heads up that this was coming, but without telling you specifically what it was going to be.
But there's no way going on as we currently are that we in our own lifetime or our children's lifetime, that the abyss isn't going to find us and swallow us whole. Coast to coast right now, on the East Coast right now, you have them, and this would have been in the montage, they shut down a public school with no plan for education. So they just reran the tape on COVID, knowing they're going to get away with it because of who they're dealing with. They shut down a public school to use that school as a shelter for illegal immigrants. Over in San Francisco, in that toilet, they just took a vote amongst the city council there to approve Hamas. You make all the punchlines you want to about the left coasts and all that, all right? But there's never any consequences
right.
for that. Even here in our own backyard, we just had the devil statue.
Right.
All right. There. Think Steve and I were talking about financially. You know what? When is it? They just, instead of it's your school, your bank. Just like, sorry, I know that savings, that nest egg you had in there. Nice try, but it's ours now for reasons. Hunter Biden just strolled into oversight committee on Congress and then just strolled back out of there with his, and apparently he had his own camera crew. Like, this is, we are, all of your comfort. I know you think that this thing can be, no matter what other great nations have fallen before, I know you think that this thing is just going to autopilot its way.
And every nation that falls thought the exact same thing. Yes.
It's not. It's just not. Progressivism is cancer. I don't say that because of rhetorical flourish. It is swallowing us whole right now. And your thinking that the rubber band is just going to correct itself is part of that. That's a progressive attitude. That you don't have to be a citizen. You can just be a consumer. You don't have to stand a post. We're dying, ladies and gentlemen. We are absolutely dying.
I mean, you mentioned California. You and I are in our early 50s. We are old enough to remember when California was the bastion of freedom in America.
Yeah.
I mean, California was the birthplace of the Reagan Revolution. California was a firmly reliable red state. Prior to the Reagan amnesty of 1986, 7 of the 10 previous presidential elections, California went Republican. I mean, Aaron can't talk today, but if you're in his era, if you're a millennial or a Gen Zer, you hear me say that. That has to seem, that was Earth 4.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? How did that happen? How, one generation, it went from the place that the modern conservative movement was born to the exact place where the current demonic spirit of the age calls its headquarters. That's not a coincidence, man. The enemy saw that and said, "That's we're going to go right where you think you're strongest. We're going right there and knocking on the front door. And we'll just, if you don't answer, we'll just beat it down and dare you to do something about it." That happened in one generation. One. Let's reverse engineer this for a minute just to test my hypothesis further. We have talked on this show before that we don't have to embellish the founding and history of this country. The actual truth is its own reward. It does not actually detract from our country's origins that not every founding father was perfect. I mean, last year, a couple of the Trump grifters lost their minds when I said there were founding fathers in hell. There are founding fathers in hell. There are people who were part of great human efforts all throughout history who are in hell. Jesus himself said, some of you will come to me and you'll say, hey, we did this in your name. We did this for you. And I'm going to be like, depart from me, man. I don't know you. To me, that's like the most chilling verse in the entire Bible, by the way. Because it is not what you do in this life that determines whether you spend eternity with God in heaven or not. But whether you sought God's will for your life in this life, beginning with the forgiveness of your sins, that determines that. Do we have evidence that every single member of the founding fathers asked for Christ to atone for their sinfulness?
Not to my knowledge.
That means there's at least one of them there as we speak tragically right now. See, to me, I don't think that takes away from the credibility of our founding at all. I think it confirms it. It shows that our founders, in their own imperfect natures, cried out for God's sovereignty to intervene on their behalf, and he did. Because you know what that also shows? That shows in every era and in every generation, no matter how wicked we were 5 minutes ago, if we sincerely seek after God 5 minutes from now, he'll answer. Doesn't mean, by the way, that you will not be held accountable for your actions. You will be. But in the end, mercy triumphs over judgment. That should be an encouragement. I don't have to be perfect for God to use me. I don't have to be perfect to do a great thing. So we don't have to turn all these people into saints. They weren't. And if you read their own words, they're not the hero of the story of this country. God is. God's the hero. So if that can happen at the founding of a country, the forming of a country, right? That can, right?
Yeah.
Why couldn't a generation that does the opposite be the undoing of a country then? It only works one way. It only works the positive way.
Well, forget can, must in both directions.
That's right, because God then would not be just. Yeah. Because then, you know, then he's the hippie God. Everything's good. Everybody's affirmed. So is God a God of grace or justice? Yes. And they both get the last word. In heaven or hell, God's grace and justice both get the last word. You can receive the grace of God and spend eternity with him. And his grace, therefore, gets the last word in your life, right? Or you can reject it and spend eternity apart from him. And therefore, God's justice gets the last word. See, we are not God. We can't do things like that. We can't simultaneously be of grace and justice into perpetuity. He can. So if it's true, you know, we have this remarkable generation of men, that classic Paul Harvey, you know, video on the founding fathers. And here are these men of wealth, in many cases, and acclaim and fame, elites, really, and their cultures. And when they signed this secession document, they knew this war was going to be fought on their lands. That when they pledged their lives, fortunes, and sacred honors, it wasn't a blog. They knew it was going to be their plantations where these battles were going to be fought on. Because they weren't invading England, were they? No. The Redcoats were coming over here to invade them. And many of them did pay that price. And so we can't sit here on one hand and look back on what these men, even though they were not perfect, even though they did things that were shameful, but the cry out to God they made that he answered to form this country, we would be complete and total hypocrites if we sat here and said and honored what happened by that generation, but then made it look as if that could never be undone by another generation. Then we're at best, we're doing what your claim, what you mentioned. We're just going to act like this thing's on autopilot forever. Like we just are owed this. That's not how it works. And I believe firmly that this has been completely undone by this generation. Not the complete generation. And by the way, one thing, I can tell you one thing. Boomers have proven they're a heck of a lot better at making movies and music than our generation is. I think we both agree on that. Okay. So there's always trade-offs here. I was reading something the other day, or just yesterday, actually, about what DEI is doing to the airline industry as someone who's flying now more than ever before.
Yeah.
Okay. And I saw someone on Twitter. I wish I knew what account it was. I can't remember who it was. I'd give them credit if I could. Peachy something was their name, if I remember right.
Peachy Keenan.
Yeah. Yeah. That was it. Yes. I don't even know who that is. Do you know who that is? Is that a moniker, I'm guessing? Not a real name?
Probably
a moniker. Okay. And this person, male or female, guessing female, was like, you know, right now, it's the boomer pilots who are calling BS on this and pushing back. What happens when they go away? And I'm like, maybe I'll be flying a lot less. I mean, there's always trade-offs here, okay? Always. And I'm just, you know, you know, one of the reasons why I am so enamored with Ron DeSantis as a potential president and inspired to do whatever I have been able, whatever I can do the last 6 months to try to make it so. Do you know who like the other three or four Ron DeSantis is in our generation we have just warming up on deck? Do you know who they are?
I do not.
Do you know why you don't know?
Because they probably aren't there.
Because they're not there. I am not confident that our era, which took the, which took the Hustler and Penthouse magazines that the boomer dads hid in the garage and in the closet and in between the mattress and box springs of their bedrooms. Okay, we took that and said, well, let's just put that all on the internet. You know what I'm saying? I am not confident the generation that gave us reality TV and internet porn is ready to take on the day. You know what I mean? I'm not confident that Gen X is ready to. Here I am to save the day. I don't know about that one. Okay. But if that's true, part of the reason why is we weren't raised. My story of being born to a teenage mom and having a stepdad that barely cared is pretty common, actually. You know what's not common in our generation? The kind of dad you and I are trying to be right now. That's not common in our generation. It's even less common in the generation after us. So I'm not here to claim a generational superiority. I'm not. I'm just saying that if I'm right and we're under some form of a generational curse, having the majority of people in that generation whose right and wrong instincts correctly deduce what's happening to the country, but their answer is to just double down more on the self-righteous tropes that failed before, I don't think will work. And if anything, I think will be received as just more rebellion. We basically, at that point, you become the people that went to Jeremiah, the real prophet. I'm not one. The Jeremiah, the real prophet, and said, what do you mean God is going to judge us? We have the temple. We're making Israel great again. What do you mean? We're not going to be judged. Yeah, I mean, the lack of humility to accept that, yeah, you will. And if you would have accepted that, maybe Nebuchadnezzar doesn't lay siege to the city and make you drink your own urine and eat your own filth. Maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe the punishment is milder. Who knows? But since you didn't do that, that's how the story ends. And the last king of that era, Nebuchadnezzar, after he conquers the city, he brings that last king of Israel out with his entire court and family, and he kills them all right in front of him. And then he plucks his eyes out. So that's the last thing that he ever sees before he takes him off to Babylon as a prisoner. And that's the end of that generation.
And there's people, foreign and domestic, right now. It's not theoretical. They're promising all the time that that's not just a story from way back in the day. They want to do that to you right now. And still, while you still have options and breath in your lungs, you keep responding by saying, give me Barabbas.
Like if I had 20,000 boomers who sent me a note and said, Steve, we promise to go to every school board meeting the rest of our lives if you will retract your endorsement of Ron DeSantis and support Donald Trump, I'd make that deal right now. Make it right now. But the paradigm of this generation has been to go to no school board meetings and just watch Fox News every night. So here we are. All right, back here with Hour 2, live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. I'm Steve Dace, he's Todd Erz, and he's Aaron McIntyre. Except you won't be seeing or hearing from him today. My man is, he's down today. I mean, he's hurting pretty bad. And if we were not up against the clock with the Iowa caucuses in our own backyard, I would have told my man to take his first sick day since 2018. He's toughing it out. So we have kind of a stripped down, bare bones edition of the program here today, just so we can at least get on the air. then hopefully he'll get home and get some more rest and feel better tomorrow. We'll be joined at the end of this hour by Florida First Lady Casey DeSantis, who's here in the state campaigning for her husband for president of the United States. So she'll be joining us a little bit later on. We will get to buy, sell, or hold here in just a few minutes as well. Don't forget that you can let us know what you think about what we think by emailing the show, steve@stevedace.com, DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe and Gab. You can follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Getter, Instagram, and TikTok. And you can also leave us a 5-star review if you listen via the podcast. We would greatly appreciate that. Our hope this year, we're well over 9,000. We'd love to hit over 10,000 reviews, 5-star reviews on iTunes. That'd be great. Thank you to all of you that have left us one of those. And thank you as well if you've hit subscribe or on iTunes, follow. And if you haven't yet, here's why you want to do that. That way, every time we do a new episode, it shows up in your feed every single time. And this part of the show brought to you by Bonner Private Wines. We've got a special treat for you. It is their Sunai Illogico Malbec that comes from deep in the Calaqui Valley in Argentina. A breathtaking altitude approaching 9,000 feet. That means it's the third highest vineyard in the world, which also means it comes highly rated at 91 points. No fining or filtration is done when producing the Sunai Illogico, and that preserves its true natural taste. It also boasts about 10 times the resveratrol levels. You can look that up to see what the benefits of that happen to be. Bonner Private Wines is the sole importer of this amazing Malbec. If you want to get a bottle of this exclusive wine, you can do so by visiting BonnerPrivateWines.com and becoming a member of the Bonner Private Wine Partnership. That's BONNER, and they've got other wines there as well that are outstanding. We've over the years, all three of us have tried them and gave them rave reviews. This is one of Todd's favorites that we talk about on the show, for example. You can get those for over 50% off and free shipping, over 50% off and free shipping at BonnerPrivateWines.com/Steve, BonnerPrivateWines.com/Steve. Well, we've never done it this way before, Todd. So you ready to kind of go buy, sell, or hold unplugged, if you will?
Yeah, let's jam.
All right. So with Aaron operating at 50% capacity, let's get to buy, sell, or hold. This is where you guys determine what we're going to talk about. We'll get to as many of these as we can now, and then the rest we will finish when we get to the overtime. No subject is off limits. Aaron has determined which ones will get on the air. And then Todd, you and I will determine, are we going to buy that? Are we going to sell that? If you use a hold at any point in time, let's do this for this year and see how it works. No gimmicks. You just need to know you've shamed your entire family and cultural heritage. That should be enough.
Fair.
Let's see if that's enough of an incentive. Let's see if it is. We'll find out. All right, let us begin. All right, this is from Sean Griffiths, who says, there will not be a single Christian majority country in Western Europe within the next generation. Most of their cathedrals will be destroyed, repurposed, or turned into mosques. Within a couple of generations, there will be some European countries under some form of Sharia law. Are you buying or selling that?
Buy. I mean, there already isn't. I mean, I don't care what bean counting they use when they take a census. There already isn't a majority Christian country in Western Europe,
no,
is there? In
no.
any real sense?
You have some of the old, I guess, do you consider Poland?
No, that's not what it was. I don't think they're considered. That's Eastern Europe.
Yeah, it's considered in the Soviet bloc, even though it borders Germany. Okay. But the old Soviet bloc countries are still kind of holding, that broke out of that.
Yeah, but
are
that's
still
not
holding.
Western Europe.
Yeah, they're the last vestiges of the old Europe. But the only reason I would sell this is much of this is already occurring.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been going on for nearly a decade that Muhammad has been the most popular new male baby name in the city of London for childbirths. We've already seen many of the old cathedrals turned into mosques. I think less than 2% of France now is evangelical. So I will buy, and the only reason you would sell is that your timeline is not accelerated enough.
Yeah. You just wait, though. There's all these Western women who, they're this close in these countries. And it's like the San Franciscan who's voting for Hamas. They haven't made you wear the burqa yet. But it's coming.
Sure.
And then what?
Oh, no,
and then
were,
what kind of vote are you going to take?
You did wear the burqa, brother.
Oh, well,
it was the Chinese cloth face diaper. That was
there
the
it is.
That
See,
was the burqa for the spirit of the age here in the West.
But that's why they know they're going to bring the real thing.
Yes, that's true too. All right, next. James Miller says Jim Harbaugh will go to the NFL after climbing to the top of the college football mountain at Michigan, leaving Steve and Michigan fans to wander in the desert another 26 years. I'll lead off with this one. I'm going to sell because of your latter part. I mean, we weren't terrible those whole 26 years. We weren't as good as we are now, but I mean, we were still averaging nearly 8 wins a year. We won major bowl games. We won Big Ten championships. I mean, Lloyd Carr was still putting together Hall of Fame college football resumes.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's not the take you had on your program 3 years ago for these last.
Well, that's because I had given
low in lamentation.
I was because I had given up that I thought Jim could do it. But I'm now. But now I've seen that Jimmy can. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Right, when things are not going well, he's Jim. Yes. When things are going great, he's Jimmy.
I know intimately how this thing goes now. Trust me.
But I mean, no. I do think Jim will go off to the NFL. Although you know what's funny is now that it's the most logical move to make, and all the Michigan fans are totally okay with it, it would be kind of the Jimmy thing to say, I'll stick around. He's entirely unpredictable. Entirely. That being said, I do think he'll go off to the NFL, so I'll buy that. But I don't think Michigan's never experienced a 26-year desert in the history of its program. I mean, if your only definition of success is winning a national championship, well, then a lot of teams have experienced that. So that's just I'll sell on those grounds.
I'll generally buy the thrust of that because of the largely because of the playoff. Had this 12-team playoff that everybody wants and everybody needs and it must happen for our righteousness to prevail, had that not been happening and we stayed something, kept what we have now, which again, Steve, how many years have we done it? Is this 10 years, 9 years, whatever?
10 years. We had 10 years of the 14 playoff.
It worked until this year. When you basically could have taken another four teams that didn't get in and replaced the four that were, including Michigan, Michigan, this is not taking anything away from what Michigan accomplished there, but you could have basically had as competitive of games. It was that deep for the first time this 10 years. Nobody really had a really good argument for somebody just got totally screwed or this isn't working. It took away a lot of the controversy of what happened before that. But now that we have the 12-team playoff, I would have said, like, forget just the last 3 years. I mean, they made it in the last 3 years. Last year they lost to TCU, but I think every incentive would be there to, like, be the next Alabama because the momentum's all there. Keep going with it. But now that you have a 12-team playoff, it is going to be so much harder for every single team to make the kind of runs that Michigan just made or Alabama recently made. So if you have a calling and Harbaugh's got, no matter what Harbaugh says, this is an itch because he's a weird dude that he's always scratching every year, no matter what's going on at Michigan. I just think it's likely that he goes.
I agree. It's likely that he goes. My only argument was with the latter part. I mean, and I think actually the latter part, what you just said, actually affirms my argument with the latter part.
But even
part.
Jim was thinking what you
a
think.
Lot of teams are going to have, if the new standard now is everything that wasn't winning a national championship is unsuccessful, we're going to have way more variance than we ever did before. Then everybody is going to experience long droughts now because we're not going to see runs like Georgia and Alabama just had, for
example. But it's important. He's going to be a lot like you in whatever perspective he has at a given moment. It was just a week ago in the fourth quarter of a game, you said, I guess we just don't win national championships.
Correct.
Because that... And that's more and more what all sports people think about this. They don't have any perspective. They're incredibly myopic because this is crack to them. They're addicted to this. And it's even worse than crack because this isn't a bad thing. It's a beautiful thing. And we've still made it our drug of choice. We can't think clearly about it as sports bros anymore. And that's a deep, deep tragedy because this is supposed to be fun and beautiful. And we're sucking the life out of it. So I don't know what... thinking long term about this sport is almost like thinking long term about anything, because we're destroying all of it in real time.
I agree that long term thinking about virtually anything in society right now, in our society, is not a good idea in general. All right, next, John Baxter, top four 80s female vocalists in no order. Number one, Whitney Houston. Yes, that's an automatic, right?
Yes.
Number two, Bonnie Tyler, like Total Eclipse of the Heart,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Number three, Laura Branigan, that's Gloria, right?
Yes.
And then number four is Pat Benatar. So I think one in four are automatics. Fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
Two, I think you could take great issue with. Because, for example, we're talking female vocalist. Didn't say soloist, right? Okay. So the Bengals were the greatest greatest selling female musical act of that era. You know, I can't remember the gal.
I'm not taking bands. I'm taking this very literally. Vocalist, not necessarily performers. I mean, because if it was performer, you'd have Madonna in there. I don't believe Madonna's a better.
So Madonna doesn't belong in there, you don't think?
I don't think she's a better vocalist than those four.
Than Laura Branigan? I think she's a better vocalist than Laura Branigan.
I don't know. When you think of what, I don't know much about, I mean, Bonnie Tyler and her are interesting pulls because what I know of them is from their classic songs, but
Stevie Nicks had a very successful solo career in the 1980s. All right. She should be up there before Laura Branigan.
Stevie Nicks isn't a great vocalist.
You don't think Stevie Nicks is a great vocalist, really?
You think about the... No, I don't. I mean, she's not...
Aretha Franklin had several big hits in the 80s. She's got to be on the list. She might be the greatest female vocalist of all time.
Yes, but she's not classically 80s.
No, but she had several massive hits in the 80s, more hits than Laura Branigan had. I mean, you've got to put Aretha Franklin on the list. I would put Madonna before I put Laura Branigan on the list. I'm okay with Bonnie Tyler, just given the uniqueness of her voice. And she did have one of the seminal hits of the era, okay? But I'd put Stevie Nicks on that list before her. I mean, those are just a few from the 80s off the top of my head right there that I would absolutely put there.
I'm just taking vocalist more literally. Somebody who just can flat out croon, and maybe they're terrible at writing songs.
I thought we were missing somebody obvious, and we are. Tina Turner's got to be on the list. She was a massive solo selling artist, and she's absolutely...
I don't disagree about that. But
she belongs on the list before Laura Branigan does.
I think maybe the thought is that, is she as much 70s as 80s?
No. All her big hits... Well, when she was with Ike, that was the 70s. But as a solo artist, all her big hits were in the 80s.
That's the best name that's not on there that I would absolutely take. Yeah.
All right. Next one. So we're selling that list, though. I'm selling it.
No, I bought it. I'm fine with it.
Okay. Jim Stalker says there hasn't been an election in the United States since its inception that has driven the country solidly onto a course toward less government and more liberty. Each has driven the country toward more government and less liberty.
Yes.
I'm going to sell. I don't think you can say the Calvin Coolidge presidency drove the country to more government. I don't think you can say that.
Oh, what was the era it said?
I think he said ever.
There
he said there
election.
Hasn't been.
Oh,
since its inception. I would also, in a way, I would argue the first election did, because by virtue of having it and not accepting the offer to become king, George Washington inherently gave us less government than we would have had if we had a monarch. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So while by the spirit of your post, I'm feeling you, dog. Okay. By the spirit of your post, I'm feeling you on a literal application of it. I think it's an overreach, so I will sell.
Yeah, I don't know. I inferred that you, I don't know why I did. Maybe my default is there that no matter what you say about government, progressive, yes. But I, not since the beginning, I was thinking this century. And then Steve brings up an interesting point about Calvin Coolidge. But, you could view Calvin Coolidge as simply being a plug because the progressive movement had already started. It's certainly a vote as a warning signal, but did it reverse course? I think an argument can be made based on everything that happened afterwards. The answer is no, but...
I mean, I would say the Taft election meant less government, and that's one of the reasons Teddy Roosevelt came out of retirement to oppose him, is because he didn't want that to be the face of the Republican Party. He wanted small P progressivism to be. So,
but overall, I did overreach early on. I think Steve is right. It's a little too broad, but not too much.
Okay. Jeff Burkhart says Iowa caucus turnout under 216,000. And he picked that number because he says that's the amount predicted by the DeSantis Super PAC, Never Back Down. Now, I don't know what their number is. I'll take that for granted, Jeff, that you have it right.
What's the record number?
186, just under 187. 186 and high change in 2016. I don't even think we're going to hit that.
Yeah, so, this weather's going to play a role. It's supposed to snow again on Friday.
Yeah, I'm a buy. I don't even think we're going to hit the 187 that we hit in 2016.
It's going to be under, yeah.
Okay. Next, Uncommon Sense, S-C-E-N-T-S, for those of you on the podcast, meaning smells. The only chance communism has to work is if all of society and government are devout followers of Christ. I would buy this because it would require an Acts 2 kind of a spirit, sharing of things in common under the spirit, meaning you are living in objective denial of your nature. But remember, even in that case, is it who are the two that the couple that promised to sell off their assets and share them with the church,
right,
and then kept some for themselves,
yeah,
right? Like underreported the number or something, if I remember right. Okay,
that did not and go well for
and
them.
Pete, who is it? Do you remember who it was?
I don't remember the
name. I don't either.
No.
And Peter calls him in, kind of like God walking in the garden in Genesis 3.
Yeah.
Peter calls him and says, hey, man, how'd that transaction go for you guys? But that was pretty good. Yeah. Appreciate the magnanimous gift, you know. And then they just lie. And then the Holy Spirit strikes them dead right there for lying right there, you know. So even in a community that is completely culturally squeezed out, so it has nothing else competing with its own allegiance to one another, we still couldn't get everybody to go along with sharing everything in common. Man, that kind of makes me think that maybe it's just impossible, period. Like this, I'm going to say sell, and here's why. Communism is essentially the devil's attempt to rip off the millennial reign. That instead of waiting for the return of Christ in the millennial reign, when the lion lays down with the lamb and the enemy is vanquished into the lake of fire, instead of all that, the enemy came up with his own cheap knockoff called communism, that we can just do this all on our own without Christ. So I don't think this side of the millennial reign we could do this, even as humans within a church construct. So I'll sell.
Yeah, you'd be right. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church is very clear on this. While it points out the obvious pitfalls of all forms of government, it holds no hope in communism. It's inherently broken.
It's inherently demonic.
Yes. Yeah. There's no, yes, capitalism can be terrible, but it's not default terrible. It is a clear Christian teaching, at least within the Catholic Church, that communism is destined to fail.
Before we move on with part two of Buy, Sell, or Hold, a word about our friends over at Jace Medical. They watched in December as drug shortages hit a record high, and they are concerned about severe disruptions in medical treatments. That's why even important drugs like the antibiotic amoxicillin, they're in short supply right now, as well as 294 others. Doctors are saying they've been forced to make impossible choices, including choosing which patients to prioritize receiving potentially curative therapy. This is why you need the Jace case, folks. It's a personalized emergency kit that contains five essential antibiotics that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. And Jace is working to continually expand its medication offerings. You can customize your Jace case as well. They've even added ivermectin as an option in the Jace case. Buy one for yourself. Get one as a gift with a gift card for a member of your family or a loved one so that they can get a Jace case of their own and personalize it to their needs. Everyone should be empowered to care for themselves and their loved ones during the unexpected. So get yours today. Go to jacemedical.com. Enter the code DACE at checkout for a discount on your order. That's promo code DACE, my last name, at jacemedical.com. J-A-S-E, J-A-S-E, jacemedical.com, promo code DACE. All right, let's continue on with buy, sell, or hold. Data Masks says the dude code dictates that after the fourth IOU, there are no more IOUs for the pull jar, pay cash on the spot, or take a round from the airsoft device. Here's the problem. I'm going to sell. Here's why. There's just very few cash transactions anymore. Like I have very little cash I carry on me. So I owe the swear jar, same difference. I owe the pull jar $40. Right? I asked the wife yesterday, can you go when you get a chance, can you get me $100 in cash? And I'm just going to put $100 in here. 40 that I back owe, and then I'll pay forward $60. You know, so I can, we just don't have cash as readily available as much as we used to, man.
Worthy cause, I'm selling. Worthy cause aside, I am plotting the day and the time and the hour when I am going to go full leg lamp on this jar, and it's just going to have an unfortunate demise, and I'm going to be there. Yeah, I'm going to be there in the living room. I don't know what happened. I was just vacuuming.
Yeah, nice. Is it Pugilist? I think that's what it says. Pugilist says a second jar will need to be placed on the desk to collect the lines of the word, or the fines of the word that will not be spoken before the summer is over.
This jar is killing us.
I don't believe we're going to need a second jar. I don't. That time of year, regardless of who the nominee is, when we get to that point of the year, there's going to be even the far fewer reasons to even talk about them than there are then.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because then we get into, it's so obvious everything is a psyop at that point. It's not even a debate. You know, like Trump's going to lose Wisconsin by 16 points kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Okay. I mean, no. I think this thing will go full throated here for about a month or so. Or a couple of months or so, and then I think however long this primary lasts, or whenever we get to Trump's, you know, Washington, his January 6th trial, yesterday's appeal hearing, by the way, did not go very well for Trump. But whenever this primary ends, they've really front loaded the schedule, so I think a lot of this we're going to know early to mid March. So by when we get into April, May, June, and then you're into, it's down to Republicans and Democrats. There's going to be even less reasons to trust and talk about these things then. So, no.
Yeah, no, we need our people eye on the ball of the content, what you talked about in your opening monologue in the opening hour. And right now they're just writing us emails to try to troll us into saying it and put it in the
Yes,
jar,
that's so true, too. And I respect it, by the way. I have to tell you, man, again, I'm going on 4 weeks since I muted as many references to that word as I could on my Twitter account. I got to tell you, man, I'm actually reading more stuff. There's more think pieces, more stuff that I'm like, I'm going to read that full, you know, all the way. It does really show you how much content is just driven by these things. And it's just so shallow, vapid, and unnecessary. All right, let's continue. B-Rob says, Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump will be separated by less than 3% in the final Iowa caucus tally. What do you think? It was a little less than 4% between Trump and Cruz, I believe, in 2016.
It can go as long as the margin can go either way. I think DeSantis is going to win.
You do.
If Iowa is still Iowa, well, this is the conversation. I know we don't quite agree on at least the last time we had it, but if Iowa is still Iowa, all the signs are pointing that absolutely. Everything that the way they voted in the past, in terms of the endorsements that happen right now, I believe Ron DeSantis is going to win. And Iowa is going to have to do some clear-headed thinking and all of on every level about what's different now. Because voting for Donald Trump, and certainly doing it overwhelmingly, makes zero sense for Iowans. Whatever the other states end up doing, I don't know. But Iowa, if Iowa is proud of who has been its in the past, you need to step up and you need to vote for Ron DeSantis. Because otherwise, what you've been doing this entire time makes zero sense. And I'm going to hold you to that.
I'm going to sell because I honestly don't know what's going to happen. I live in the most densely populated part of this state. And I don't think I've seen a single Trump sign the entire time. I didn't know what a Nikki Haley sign looked like until last week. And I don't want to make it look like everybody's got DeSantis signs in their yard, because they don't. I've seen four, which is four more of it than I've seen of anybody else's, not counting my own. I just, it's the weirdest, and I'm going to tape something with Stu for his show tonight after we're done here today, where he wants me to get in depth about Iowa. Stu, if you're watching, be prepared to be disappointed with my answers. I don't have a clue. It's the weirdest, most peculiar cycle I've ever seen. I have a hard time believing that Trump has a 30-point lead. I also have a hard time believing, or I would have had a very hard time pre-COVID believing that everything would be that far off. Until, you know, they also told me that masks work 99% of the time, and so does the jab. So I don't know.
If you had enough,
I'm going to learn what's going to happen and why on Monday night at the same time all of you are.
If you had enough faith in your issues in the past and that those issues were so important and so fundamental to why you show up on that cold and snowy night that you anointed Mike Huckabee and you anointed Rick Santorum and you anointed Ted Cruz, and you didn't care what the polls said during that time, you didn't care what any national media said, you didn't care what Hollywood said, you said, we're Iowa, we're going to do what we think is good, true, and beautiful. And now, if you, given the options you have on the table, none of you can look me in the eye. You have whatever reason you have, no reason you have has anything to do. You don't have the best option on the table you've ever had before to lift up those ideas and carry them to the finish line. And you don't? Folks, I'm doing the math. It's 1 + 1 = 2. If you do something else, you're going to be doing some other negative integers, bizarro land, backwards universe notion that you're going to be rejecting everything you've done in the past.
By the way, Ananias and Sapphira.
There.
That's who went before Peter and lied. Thank you, guys. Good to see the biblical literacy in this audience, because there's literally 70 emails in my inbox right now pointing out to us the names we couldn't remember before. All right, let's try to do at least one more. From Alex Pichardo, Donald Trump's chances of getting put in prison are higher than anyone on the Epstein list. We are not a nation of laws and never have been. We are a nation of political will and always will be. I think this is an unquestionable buy.
It only has to be 1% for that to happen.
You beat me to it. I went with the William Shatner pregnant pause, and like Republicans, you pounced. Yeah. And so I didn't have a chance to deliver the money line, but that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
If the odds are only 1% that they will put Trump in prison, that's probably 100% more than anybody on the Epstein client list will go to prison.
Yeah, because they put this person in prison and they start ratting. And that's what they're not going to do, because there's so much filth out there, folks. Much filth.
But if we're going to throw names like Trump and Richard Branson and Bill Clinton, if we're going to just now that a third party, a court has ordered these files to be unsealed. And so the mutually assured destruction that kept each side from wanting them out is blown up. Wouldn't it be nice to have an actual media right now that would just tell us what actually happened then? Wouldn't that be nice?
Long gone.
Yeah.
Long gone.
And probably not coming back.
Nope.
But it would be nice now to just know what happened.
Yeah.
Just to know. Let's do one more. Carrie Leskey says, buy, sell, or hold. Preborn will get a $7,000 donation by the end of the year. If we're counting all the people that have matched, that have committed to matches to me in our mailbox, then I think it could reach that number. Sure. I think that's possible. But I'm telling you, after we get past this primary, the temptation to talk about these things is going to deteriorate and diminish greatly.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, I think if you're buying stock in the poll jar, that's a first quarter buy. All right? By the third quarter, man, this thing's .com booming is what I think. We'll come back. Casey DeSantis is going to join us next. We like to remind you that Patriot Mobile has been America's only really American mobile phone company for going on a decade now. And that's why we are proud to partner with them. I actually ran into one of the Mucky Mucks over at Patriot Mobile about a year and a half ago. And he came up and said, wow, your audience has been phenomenal for our company and has really responded well. So let's keep it going. I mean, we finally took our own advice. You know, we hung on T-Mobile for a long time, mainly because I was just lazy and figured switching would be impossible with, you know, all the different lines and stuff our family has. And then T-Mobile sent out a text alert one day saying they were going to start censoring texts for misinformation where COVID was concerned. And that's when I finally called Patriot Mobile and I said, all right, whatever the hassle is, we're making that switch now. Turns out it wasn't a hassle at all. Then you start thinking, you know, like those Aaron Rodgers commercials. Well, maybe they're just, you know, making it easy for me because, you know, I'm on the air talking about them. But I've heard from a ton of you as well that they made this switch as seamless as absolutely possible with their 100% U.S.-based customer service team. You can keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade if you want to do that. If you're a veteran or first responder, let them know when you go to make the switch. They have extra ways to say thank you for your service for the rest of us. You can get a free activation with the offer code Steve if you make the change today at patriotmobile.com/Steve. Again, patriotmobile.com/Steve, or call them at 972-PATRIOT. Joined now here in studio by Florida First Lady Casey DeSantis, who is here as we're down the stretch with the Iowa caucus. It's good to see you, Casey. How are you?
Hey, good to see you. A little bird told me it was going to be 20 below on caucus night, so I'm teasing him because apparently you got Celsius confused with Fahrenheit. That's okay. Happens to the best of
us. True.
But now
it's going to be pretty close. Now I'm told it might be minus 14.
It is going to be cold.
Yeah.
So I have extra layers. So thank you. And a heated vest.
Just on the personal side, living in Florida, what's it like being up here around all this all the time weather?
Well, so I grew up in Ohio, right? In Troy, 45 minutes north of Dayton. So I was used to the snow.
You've seen desolation. You've seen some things.
Listen, I've shoveled my car out of the snow. No snow days. I mean, I grew up with that. But I'll tell you, when you move to Florida, your blood thins a little bit and you turn into a little bit of a weather wimp, which is what. But I'll tell you, I'm getting my bona fides back coming up here. The snow is great. So we were out playing in the snow yesterday or 2 days ago, actually the past 2 days with Mason, my son, who's here with me. But, you know, it's the wind that really gets you. When the wind comes in at 20 miles per hour and it's horizontal snow, that's when it gets really chilly.
That is true indeed. So what's it been like on the ground down here for the last stretch run in Iowa?
Yeah, it's been great. There is a lot of enthusiasm. There is a lot of folks who obviously, and this has been one of the greatest parts of this process, Iowans take this process very seriously. I go out and I'll meet with folks and do coffees, and they'll come with legal pads of questions and notes and research on Ron and the other candidates. Mm-hmm. And so, but you see a lot of enthusiasm and support, and here's why. Because at the end of the day, the people of Iowa understand we need to send somebody to Washington who will actually get the things done that they say that they're going to do. I mean, we are tired as Republicans of losing, and we are tired of people saying that they're going to do all these wonderful things and never act upon it. And so when you look at what's happening in the southern border, and that's one of the number one issues in addition to the economy and the indoctrination that's happening in the schools, but the border, 8 million people coming across just under Biden. I mean, the people that are coming from countries and places that, you know, are shouting death to America. Don't think for a second they're not trying to infiltrate our southern border and come across and potentially, and God forbid, I hope not, but to do us harm. They see this. They want somebody to be able to get it done on day one. And they look at Ron in the state of Florida as a guy, when he says he's going to do it, he not only delivers, he over delivers. And that's what we need.
Tell our audience around the country who's never been to Iowa, never been a part of the caucus process, they've only just heard people like me who live here talk about it, you know, over the years. Now that you've had a chance to spend most of this calendar year immersed in it to some degree, what is it that you can tell them about this process and why, if maybe you don't think this, but why perhaps Iowa does benefit the country overall? And what you've experienced interacting with Iowans here for the better part of the last 7-8 months.
Yeah, Iowa embodies what makes this country exceptional. Faith, family, they want a restoration of sanity. I mean, they're just looking for, again, someone to get the job done. This process is very special because every single person that I've had an opportunity to meet has done their homework. They understand the stakes. They see what's happening in Washington. They want to be able to see somebody go up there and get the job done. And so it's been a privilege. It's been an an honor. Listen, you know, I go around and I do coffees on my own. Chip Roy and I went out. We were in Fort Madison. We were going out and meeting folks and doing coffees and taking questions. And, you know, it's so impressive to see. Like, I'll start talking about Ron's record and they already know about half of it. And so I think that that's just very special. And I really believe that Iowa's going to change the trajectory of the entire nation. I see that they understand the stakes and they can blow through this narrative that you see the media, the left, some establishment Republicans trying to perpetuate, saying that this is a foregone conclusion. They understand. They have it within their power to change the trajectory. They take this process very seriously. And I'll tell you what, our folks who are supporting Ron, and we are so appreciative of that, they're going to show up in minus 14 degree weather because they see the opportunity before them. Just like when you had Carter and you ushered in a Reagan, we have the opportunity with Biden to usher in of Ron DeSantis, and they get that. And this is one of those opportunities where we can change the direction of this country and restore what makes us exceptional.
You and I have gotten to know each other a little bit through this process.
Yes.
I am not fond of saying I don't know. I'm not. I don't go out there to not let my opinion be known or to take a position on something. But I have gotten phone calls in the last few days from the New York Times, Washington Post, all kinds of global media entities have tracked me down. I'm even going to go when we're done here. I'm going to tape something for Stu's show later tonight here on The Blaze. And you know, he's going to want me to play Oracle of the Iowa caucus as I have in the past. And I have to tell you, I don't know what to think about what's going to happen. This has been the most, and I've been a part of every cycle since 1996, so almost 30 years. I've never seen anything like it. It felt like with all the indictments and everything that went on in the spring and the summer, like we weren't even having a caucus. It kind of felt to me like when Governor Reynolds endorsed, like that at least turned the light on. Like oh yeah, people, I guess we're having a caucus. Like people were like reminded it was taking place. And then it does feel like in these last few weeks that a lot of the energy that's kind of been pent up in this process has kind of all exerted itself, all at one time. But like I was mentioning in the audience, Casey, before you came on, I live in one of the most densely populated areas of this entire state. There's like 7 yard signs. There's like 5 for DeSantis. One of them's mine. I've seen none for Trump. I've seen none. There's one for Vivek. And I didn't know what a Nikki Haley yard sign looked like until the CNN town hall last week. There's just in past cycles, like the neighborhoods were littered with these things. So I don't know what to think about what's going to happen on Monday night. What can, I'm asking you, this is the first time you've ever done this. You have nothing to compare it to. Is my read of this right, wrong, indifferent? How would you react to that?
I think Americans, and particularly Iowans, are looking for a restoration of sanity. They're looking for someone who's going to defend faith. They're looking for someone who's going to stand up for their values. They're looking for someone who is going to fight on their behalf and do it with class and grace and integrity, and who ultimately has a record of getting the job done. So, do we know what ultimately is going to happen? No. I mean, I would say polls have historically been so inaccurate. I don't know why people always tether themselves to it. I mean, if you look at, when Ron was running against Andrew Gillum, I think he was down 7 points the night before he won the election. I think they had him down or just up by 2 points to Charlie Crist, and he ended up winning by the largest landslide of any Republican governor in the history of the state. Now, I've been out knocking on doors, and I've been in your neighborhood, and I've seen those signs. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that, folks are hungry for a change. And yes, they are starting to become, I think, they've always been involved in the process, and but I think getting out there more. For instance, like when Ron was out with Chip Roy and Thomas Massey, they went to just do a stop at a restaurant or a diner. They didn't know how many people are going to be there. They had 200 people show up. They didn't even have microphones. They just descended upon it because they wanted to see Ron and they wanted to have their voice be heard. So when I was out knocking on doors in West Des Moines and Clive and some of these other places, we were out there and we knocked on our 3 millionth door. We've knocked on nearly 1 million doors across Iowa. We've knocked on doors for every caucus goer 4 times over.
And I've never heard of that, by the way.
And now we are on our 5th pass.
Yeah.
We have 1,600 precinct captains, 40,000 doesn't commit to caucus. And I'm on the phone talking to a lot of these folks, just saying, hey, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being a precinct captain. Thank you for getting your friends. Thank you for showing up on caucus night to go out and either speak on behalf of the governor or caucus for the governor. And I'll tell you what, they say, you know what? I feel like it's my duty. This is our opportunity to change the trajectory. And they're honored to be a part of a movement to restore sanity in this country. And I think that there's, you know, ultimately, do we know? No. But I believe that Iowa will change the trajectory of the entire nation.
Casey DeSantis here with us on The Blaze. I've noticed something that pro DeSantis social media accounts on Twitter or X have been pointing out during the various town halls that have been on TV here, including last night on Fox, how many times that your husband gets asked about Trump from people and how many times he gets asked about Trump when the media asks the questions. And they're pointing out that when the people stand up to ask questions, they almost never ask a question about Trump. But when the media asks him questions at these events, they tend to start with that. What have you guys seen on the campaign trail? You are running against essentially an incumbent, for lack of a better description. I mean, he did win the state twice as a general election candidate. When you're out there on the stump, how often do people ask you about Trump or compare yourselves to Trump? Or do they want to know who your candidate is, who your husband is, just as an individual?
I get more questions about who Ron is as an individual. They want to know more about him. They want to know more about his background. They want to know more about the vision for the country going forward. I from what I hear from folks, they don't want to relitigate the past. They don't want to give Biden a permission slip to go back to the basement to make this a referendum on everything that happened previously. They want to be able to see what the vision is and to have somebody articulate that for our country moving forward. And that, by and large, is it. It's usually about the issues. I hear a lot about the border. I hear a lot from moms and grandmoms about how they're furious about the indoctrination in the schools. I hear a lot about the American dream. The more I talk to moms, they say, you know, the harder my kids are working, the more they're getting behind. I hear a lot of frustration about what's happening in Washington. Why do they continuously keep passing and putting forth these omnibus bills where they're spending and there's no restraints on any of it? Mm-hmm. And then we wonder why we're having high inflation. We wonder why all these things are happening. They want to see somebody stand up there and finally stop it. They're tired of it. They want to see somebody like Ron DeSantis. We talk about term limits for members of Congress. That's really important. We need a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. We need a line item veto. We need to reduce the size and scope of the bureaucracy by 50%. Take these agencies out of Washington and move them to Iowa. Take the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division and move it to Arkansas. Get we the people back in the government. And oh, by the way, when you make Ron DeSantis the nominee and then you get him into the White House, an all hands call on deck to the people of this country to say, come and serve in Washington, because this is the election and they understand, as our founders created, can we, the people, govern ourselves? Or are they going to be elites up in Washington in their ivory towers dictating to us how much rights that we can have when they deem it's necessary? They understand that Ron is that vessel to restore our constitutional system and decency and goodness and faith and family. And so I get questions about the issues, and I get questions about how do we get this country back on track before we lose the foundations where we may never be able to get them back? And they are very concerned about the prospects of that. If Biden were to be able to get into the White House again, and if he took the House and the Senate, you know, they would very well do things that they've been talking about: abolishing the Electoral College, packing the Supreme Court, mass mailing of ballots, abolishing voter IDs, doing things that could fundamentally change this country for forever. And you've got one guy willing to hold the line to defend everything that made this country great, and that's Ron DeSantis. And so I see that as what people are looking for when they are going to be going out and casting their vote at the caucus.
We've got about 2.5 minutes. Has this been fun?
Yes.
What's been the most fun part about it?
I mean, I don't even know where to start. So in Sac County, the world's largest popcorn ball. I've been to the world's largest truck stop at I-80. I mean, if you want really good cheese curds, I'm not going to lie. Alameda County.
They actually run ads on podcast all over the country for that truck stop, in fact. But yeah, go ahead.
It's been fun. It has been an honor and a privilege, and with much humility, that I've been able to approach this. I mean, you look at Ron's background. I mean, blue collar kid, you know, growing up, nobody ever gave gave him a chance to be able to do things. And now, look, he is in the command of the third largest state in the nation, the 13th largest economy in the world, and on the precipice of defending and saving the American Republic. Only in America do you have someone who came from very humble beginnings being able to save this country. That is what we are fighting to protect, not only for your kids and folks' grandkids and, you know, our children. And so, you know, it has been with much humility and an honor and a privilege to approach this. You know, with humility comes grace, and, you know, with pride comes chaos. And so we approach this as an honor and a privilege to be able to put ourselves out there as a vessel, as a servant to the people. It's not about us. It's not about trying to be somebody. It's about when the good Lord gives you an opportunity to serve in this limited window that we're on this planet, what do you do with it? Mm-hmm. Are you a potted plant, or do you put yourself into the arena to fight and defend for the people of this country and put their interests ahead of your own? And so it has been a privilege to do this. And I will say, there is so much truth to Iowa Nice. No matter where I've been, we have been warmly embraced. People have been so kind. I walk in and out of a Casey's, people are like, hey, keep it up, keep up the good fight. You walk into a Pizza Ranch, you get the best fried chicken, by the way, anywhere. It's really good. And people have been kind. So it's been a lot of fun, but it's also been just an honor to be in this position.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you came down here in the midst of what is going to be an incredible schedule, I'm guessing, these last 5 days, to give us some time. And good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Yes,
and I'm negative 14, so that's going to be chilly.
Yeah, it's going to be... We had a record cold in the 2016 caucuses, but it looks like we are going to blow that away from what they're saying right now. So we'll see what that does or does not do.
Thank you for standing up for truth. Very few people are willing to put themselves out there to defend what they know is right and set their rudder to true north. And you're one of those folks, along with Ron. So thank you for what you do.
I appreciate it. It was a no-brainer for me. I mean, what your husband did in Florida is the literal manifestation fulfillment of all the shows I've ever done. So, I mean, it was just simple math to me. And I've, you know, when you move as many times as a kid as I did, when you were the new kid in school as many times as I've been, you learn how to get by without popular opinion a lot. So, thank you, Casey.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
All right,
you.
That'll do it for today's show. We're going to stick around. Todd and I will. We've got some bonus buy, sell, or hold to get to in the overtime for subscribers. For the rest of you, we will see you tomorrow. Until then, Romans 8:28.